Hello and welcome to the Impact Interviews. I'm Laura, and today I'm delighted to welcome Richard Proffitt, Chief Executive of the Cool Farm Alliance. For those of you who don't know, the Cool Farm Alliance is a non-profit that has the huge goal of accelerating sustainable solutions that address the world's greatest challenges. It brings together many of the world's leading food and beverage companies, NGOs, academic institutions, farmer groups, and agronomists to do just that through the Cool Farm Alliance. So, hi, Richard.
Hello.
Hi. As we start off, I understand that you have just released your impact report. So before we go into the detail about what the Cool Farm Alliance is, could you just tell us what do you think impact is and why do you think we should care about impact?
I think impact is about making change. So there's a lot of theory out there, there's a lot of people talking good stuff, and a lot of rhetoric. And I think a lot of that misses the point because it's all about actually creating real change that makes a difference to people's lives. And for us within the Cool Farm Alliance, that's really about agricultural systems and people around the world. And where you talk about, the global population, I don't know the exact number, but half of them or so are involved in agriculture and at the
Right.
bottom of the pyramid, and everyone is obviously involved in food because we all eat it. And so agriculture and food are absolutely critical, and creating impact in the food system and within agriculture touches everybody on the planet. And so creating that positive change, making that difference is vital, and we want to make that happen.
Right, so just to get this right, so you are creating impact for everybody on the planet.
Well, that's the bold ambition, but
Brilliant.
the way we're really doing that is by working through the supply chain. So, roughly half of the world's food supply comes through big multinational companies. The other half is obviously going through local subsistence and mom-and-pop stores and things like that. So we tend to work with big multinational food companies, trying to support them on their journeys for regenerative, sustainable agriculture so that we can make the change on the ground that's necessary. So yeah, we want to touch everybody with this. The reality is we have to start somewhere, and actually we're making interventions on the big supply chains, to create as bigger impact as possible.
Wow. Okay, right. So let's get straight to it then. So, the Cool Farm Alliance, this is the lightning round. What is it? Who cares? And why is it amazing?
Okay, so Cool Farm Alliance, we're a not-for-profit membership organization drawing from members across the food supply chain. So that might be retailers or food processes producers. It includes some of the universities around the world. It includes sort of agronomy firms and farm advisory firms, as well as growing companies that actually grow the fresh produce that ends up in your supermarkets. And we're all coming together because, for one reason or other, most of the companies have a sustainability agenda, whether it's for corporate reporting against things like the Science Based Targets Initiative, or whether they actually have a good, deep understanding of the holistic need for resilient food supply chains. But they're coming together to align on ways to quantify and report, the impacts that they have, and how to bring about change and bring in more resilient farming. I mean, why is it amazing? I think it's pre-competitive collaboration. So, our membership includes people who on the commercial side are in competition with each other, but the reality of it is they have a shared interest, and that is to help build resilience within farming. And some people ask, well, what does resilience in farming mean? I think there's a couple of dimensions to this. And in climate change and in sustainability, we talk about mitigation and adaptation. So mitigation is around reducing our environmental impact, so reducing our greenhouse gas emissions, reducing our pollution. And that's absolutely key and important. And any responsible, mature organization should have that on their agenda to reduce their impact. But adaptation comes into effect because the climate is changing. Thanks to man-made emissions, the weather we're experiencing is becoming more unstable. So the frequency and severity of adverse weather conditions is increasing. So we're seeing incidents of more rainfall, and then incidents of higher drought, and it all is throwing out our sort of normal growing patterns. And that disrupts the food supply chains. So, you know, many organizations are seeing adverse costs now in terms of food supply because they're having to find new sourcing locations. A lot of crops are being destroyed, and you know, as we're experiencing in the UK at the moment, the weather and the rainfall we've had in February is such that many of the farms have not even been able to get out and start planting their spring crops.
Right.
That's going to have implications on pricing later on in the year. And so these food companies are going to have to start looking elsewhere and trying to source food. Now, the resilience piece comes in starting to prepare your ground and your growing systems to be resilient to these adverse weather conditions. And typically, we talk about building soil carbon in the soil. So that's building the amount of carbon in its various forms, organic matter, life, and nutritional sort of value within the soil. It's often referred to as soil health. But as you improve your soil health and improve your soil carbon, that actually protects the ground from sort of water perspective. So it's able to hold more water.
Right.
So that can help you too during times of drought. But because of that absorption capacity, it can also help in times of flooding. And so you're able to grow more consistently the higher the organic content is in your soil. I'm putting this all in pretty simple terms. There's layers and layers of complexity within any system, you know, bio nature system. They tend to be very complicated. So I'm keeping it as simple as possible. Well, I'm keeping it at the level I understand it. I'll leave the scientists to deal with the very detailed complexities of this. But the point being, you can build resilience into your agricultural supply chains by looking at more sort of holistic approaches in the way you choose to grow and also sort of treat your soils. And that can help build resilience to sort of climate change sort of challenges that we're increasingly facing.
And can you think about all the examples of projects and farmers and countries that you've worked with and pick out maybe one example to bring some of the things that you just talked about to life?
I think there's lots.
I have to pick one.
I know this is the challenge. I'm trying to think of one. Right. So one of our members, Solidaridad, they're an NGO working with smallholders around the world, and they've been doing a lot of work with coffee growers recently. And they've been working with smallholder coffee growers to help them understand some of these principles of regenerative agriculture, and working with them to implement those practices. And then they've been using the Cool Farm tool, which is part of what we offer as the Cool Farm Alliance, to help quantify the emissions reductions they've been able to create and also the sequestration potential that they're able to create on those farms. And the sequestration is the capture of carbon within the soil and within the biomass and the trees and things on their farms. And all of those sort of approaches help lock away carbon, reduce emissions. So it kind of comes into that sort of mitigation and adaptation processes that we guys all touched.
So what is the Cool Farm tool?
So the Cool Farm tool is a digital platform that helps quantify environmental impacts, predominantly around greenhouse gas emissions, biodiversity impact, and water. And it's a this sort of two versions of it. There's a web app that allows farmers to gather or input their data from their farms and measure those impact categories. And what's important about that, it's about what we call democratization of knowledge, which is a bit of a fancy term, but it's about helping farmers understand in quantifiable terms the impact they're having, particularly around carbon. So they can start understanding their carbon emissions and they can use and actually what practices they're doing on farm that can influence those carbon emissions. So things like tillage practice, putting in cover crops, and the fertilizer applications and various other sort of processes and practices that they've got going on. So with that knowledge, they can then start having discussions on the farm with their agronomists, with their ecologists and other sort of farm advisors to think about their farm management plans, what they're going to do differently, and how to reduce those impacts. And so they can start to build that resilience into their own farm. Now, from a
What's
commercial
that?
perspective,
Sorry, you can.
I was going to say, from a commercial perspective, what we're seeing now is many of the sort of food processors, as part of their reporting obligations, are needing to understand what their supply chains are doing. And so they're asking for this data from their farmers, from their suppliers. And so in a way, there's this pressure on farmers to, as well as providing the crop, to actually provide their carbon number with that crop. And so using something like the Cool Farm tool and enables those farmers to understand what they're doing and then provide that data that they're being asked for. And also, typically, what we're seeing recently is the voluntary carbon markets are coming along. So, financial institutions of various forms are offering to buy that carbon sequestration that farmers are creating on their land. And it's and creating certificates can then get traded, but that is a potential source of revenue for those farmers that can help with their financial resilience as their businesses mature. So again, that quantification that can come through for carbon can then lead to these carbon certificates that can be issued and help build financial resilience for farms.
And that's all very technical and very, numbers based. Have you seen any impact on people and how they live their lives and, how they've developed and feel differently about farming over time?
I
What's the human
think,
story?
yeah. So I think it's really interesting. I was a couple of years ago, I was in Germany at a conference with the European carbon farmers. So these are a group of farmers who have all willingly jumped into regenerative agriculture, and it's really interesting to talk to these folk. They are passionate. They understand the relationship between farming and nature, and they're totally committed to restoring the health and the ecological balance on their farms. So the soil health I sort of touched on, but the biodiversity health, the provision for habitats and for other animals and organisms and plant life and fungus and all this sort of great stuff to be thriving on their farm. And their farms are a much more healthier and natural space. And these people who are working these farms glow. They're passionate and they're fantastic. And there's increasing evidence as well that the nutritional density in crops grown on sort of farms with healthy soils is higher. So most of these people on these farms are actually eating their own produce as well. So there seems to be this sort of additional health benefit that they're experiencing from managing, creating regenerative farms with very healthy ecosystems and the quality of the food that's coming off them.
So the farmers become healthier and happier.
It certainly appeared that way to me. I
Yeah.
wouldn't have the statistics to know what the implications of that on the health system locally, but certainly they were amazing.
And how do you think we've got to the stage where we need to be so proactive in terms of making these changes? Obviously, there's lots of stories about industrial farming processes and all this kind of stuff. Kind of, was it just the drive to efficiency that has caused us to deplete our farmland, or is it something else?
No, I think it's pretty much that. I think the Industrial Revolution post the Second World War, with the introduction of artificial mineral fertilizers and even government policy to rip out hedges and increase the size of the fields in order to drive efficiency on a farm, has actually led to the industrialization of agriculture. Someone's described it as green deserts, where yes, we can grow, but the actual abundance of life within those is very low. And the overuse of chemicals on agriculture kind of leads to impacts where it leads to a decline in nature, a decline in the organic life within soils, and the soils become almost sterile. And so what we see with the regenerative ag movement is it takes a good 2 or 3 years to rebuild that life back in soils. And so, farmers can get a dip in yield because if they stop using the mineral fertilizers, their yields will go down. But we see that come back again as the natural ecological balance comes into their soils and the landscape that they're farming. And then as the natural processes come back in, the natural bacteria in the soils return, that start doing nitrification and doing the sort of trace element nutrient cycling, it then starts coming back into a natural balance. So, you know, we look for greater variety in rotations, the moving away from monocrop cultures, the reduction in the use of farm chemicals. I'm not, you know, there is still the need for some farm chemicals, but it's about precision agriculture rather than kind of mass spraying of a whole field. You know, the technology now is literally putting a micro dose on the specific weed that you want to remove, or if it's you know, other crop protection measures, then again it's very much about sort of direct application rather than just mass spraying. And that there's benefits there from cost for the farmer as well as, you know, environmental pollution perspective.
Can you just remind me how many countries is your tool used? And how many farmers, and, you know, because it's quite impressive from what I can tell from your report.
Yes, yeah, so the Cool Farm tool is has been used in 150 countries around the world, just over 150 countries around the world.
Right.
And that's across both livestock and crop farming systems. And yeah, so we've got about 40,000-ish farmers around the world who are using the web app, but we also then have API interface, so our tool can be used as a calculation engine with other platforms, and we've got integrations with about 45 other platforms and digital products out there that are using our calculations within their platforms, and through that we are having millions more assessments being completed by farms around the world. Having the exact number to hand, but many farmers sort of data is being leveraged through that, and those insights are being provided back to farmers around the world.
And so how do you spread the word? How do you spread the use of the tool? You know, because it sounds fantastic, and it sounds like, you know, obviously with these millions of assessments, that's so impressive. How do you grow?
So, you know, our growth has been pretty amazing over the years, and we're still in double digit growth from our membership as organisations sort of hear about us and join us. And we don't really do any direct marketing or sort of advertising. It's mostly through word of mouth and sort of reputation. We've got a highly credible science team behind us that are in the methods that we're working with. And the functionality within the Cool Farm tool is all based on peer review published science, which provides that sort of credibility. And then the working with the various universities that we do to develop our tools and resources is fantastic, you know, and it provides that sort of basis that people can trust and rely on. So, you know, where do we go from here? I think we want to continue to develop our tools and resources, but it, you know, coming back to impact, I think many of the companies that we work with, you know, through our membership, some have been doing this for years and have, you know, huge programs in their supply chain. Others are relatively new to the agenda and are still sort of in the pilot phase and figuring out how to access and influence their supply chains. But ultimately, where we go from here, it's about scaling up. So, you know, we've proved the concept. We know the quantification works. We know that when you engage with farmers and help them understand their impacts and the benefits of making the changes that they want to do it, typically they want financial help because making the changes can be expensive, particularly as I touched on, you know, in those first few years, you might get a drop in yields. So they need financial support to see them through that phase. But ultimately, it's about scaling it up. It's taking it to more and more farmers around the world, you know, establishing more demonstration farms, because the best person to help a farmer change is another farmer. You know, they have a greater trust amongst themselves than people from the supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about scaling it. It's about building trust. It's about building programs and you know, helping create positive impact for climate change, for community action, for raising the sort of economic development in some parts of the world. And you know, linked with that, there's all sorts of programs, you know, that spin out from it in terms of gender equality, education, as well as the biodiversity impacts. I mean, what's fascinating about agriculture is it touches so many positive impact categories,
mm-hmm.
That the sort of work that can be done within agriculture and through these supply chains can touch so many lives around the world.
Yeah. And that's brilliant. And so as we come to a close, the final question for you is, for anyone starting to think about doing something, anything to create impact and positive social change, what is the number one tip that you would have for them?
I think it is being bold. I think you have to be bold. You know, things go wrong, but mm-hmm. I think if you don't set ambitious targets, you will not deliver ambitious results. So I think you have to be bold and aim high. As they say, if you aim for the moon, you'll land in the field next door. If you aim for the stars, you'll land on the moon. So I think it's be bold and push hard.
I think that's got to be the title of your podcast. So Richard Prophet, thanks ever so much and goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the Impact Interviews. If you enjoyed this episode, then please check out our back catalogue. And if you've any questions for either us or our guests, then please be sure to get in touch. We'll be back next week with something new. So see you soon.